Hello out there, this is Nick DeOlius, and this is the Farm Middle Podcast. I think we mentioned at the end of last episode that we've now covered all the major topics and themes that are encompassed in my upcoming book, The Leech. So with this episode of the Farm Middle and the next one, I want to take these next two episodes to dedicate them to some concluding thoughts, some overarching themes that we've seen across the various chapters and episodes of the Farm Middle with regard to the leech, sort of a pair of capstone episodes, so to speak. And I want to dedicate this one to the epilogue within the book. And the epilogue came together, frankly, a bit by accident, a bit by happenstance. As I was writing the book, I came across this concept that was captured by Plato in the Republic of the noble lie. And this epilogue really speaks to the noble lie, and as it pertains specifically to the leech and the leech way. And you think about philosophy, which I am not an expert on. I dabble in it and I enjoy it, but I'm just a hack when it comes to philosophy and the tenets of it. But you've got what I referenced as this coaching tree to try to dumb it down in some ways to a sports analogy. But you got the coaching tree of Socrates and then Plato and then Aristotle, which might be the greatest coaching tree in the history of mankind when you think about their contributions and what they brought to the table when it comes to enlightened thought. And I've got, of the three, ones that I agree more with, specifically Aristotle, who was elevating reason over authority and identified reason as the wellspring or the true source of happiness. I certainly subscribe to that. I think that's consistent with individual rights and the founders with respect to the United States. And I've got others, that the three that at times I would take maybe exception to or disagree with. Plato, probably of the three, was the one I would disagree with the most. He had the view that a great society should be ruled by almost an elite or authoritarian king or class, and that individual liberty is important, but maybe second behind society's collective need. To me, that smacks a little bit too much of collectivism and elitism. So again, who am I to disagree with someone like Plato? But that's the beauty of our society. You can do that if you choose. So that coaching tree and that lineage of Socrates to Plato to Aristotle, when Plato was writing his great work, The Republic, he was quoting Socrates at pieces and portions of that. And the concept of the noble lie came to be. And I think that concept is one that plays a big role in The Leech, and not just the book, but what's going on with respect to society today that we tried to capture within the book, how they've appropriated the noble lie. And that's been the subject, effectively, of the epilogue. The way that the Plato summed up the noble lie when he was speaking in a voice of Socrates in the Republic, he had a quote there from Socrates where he had Socrates saying, quote, "We want one single grand lie, which will be believed by everybody, including the rulers," end quote. So you can sort of see how Plato was framing this up in the Republic as to what the noble lie was. And my take on it was that he was saying that there is such a thing as a noble lie, which isn't a true lie because it has some truth wrapped within it. And if you use it appropriately, it can be used to bring a society together and to hold a society together. It can be used for some noble ends or objectives. But if you took a noble lie and it had no truth included within it, well, then it really wasn't a noble lie, it was an ignoble lie. So if you think about how society has utilized the noble lie through the eons, you see some pretty obvious examples. The first one is religion. How many religions out there and how many billions of people on the planet today believe in the concept of going to heaven if you do right in this life or in this world? But there's no way for any of us to prove that heaven actually exists. And many of us who are actually living our lives and making decisions to behave a certain way with the hope that down the road you get to a heaven, many of us may not even believe that logically there is a heaven. But nevertheless, it does serve this idea or this noble lie of heaven, if you live your life correctly, is a very powerful one that has shaped religions for thousands and thousands of years and have shaped human behavior across billions and billions of individuals and people across the planet. The noble lie has also played out with nations and politics. The United States is a wonderful example of that. The idea of just what the United States stands for, if you think about Abraham Lincoln, of the people, by the people, for the people, or what's in the Declaration of Independence. But then you contrast that with the country's history and reality when it comes to slavery, or when it comes to civil rights after the Civil War, when it came, whether it's Jim Crow or what was happening in the post-war South. So those realities lie in contrast or contradict the noble lie of the people, by the people, for the people. But nevertheless, that noble lie had some truth in it and continues to have truth in it. And it was a concept that helped bring a nation together or to hold it together, even through its toughest or darkest chapters. The realization that I came to while writing the book, The Leech, when it comes to the idea, the concept of the noble lie, was that I looked at our nation and our history and the values and the ethics that built us into what we became, which was the envy of the world. The noble lie was utilized as a very effective tool to do that time and time again, from the founding of the country all the way through and including World War II. However, after World War II, from my perspective, it seems as if the noble lie, that idea, that concept, that tool, instrument, whatever you'd want to call it, has been appropriated, frankly misappropriated, by the leech to deconstruct what made the United States what it is from a values and ethics and beliefs set of perspectives. And the noble lie has now been used to deconstruct and to distort what we stand for, point by point, belief by belief, in a very methodical fashion over the past number of decades and probably over the past 50 years. So it's been a very long-term focused effort. We talked about in one of the very first episodes of the Far Middle podcast how one of the key attributes of the Leech Way is its strength to be able to take a long-term view and play the long game. This is something, this misappropriation of the noble lie, that's been occurring for quite some time across key areas of our nation and of our society. Boy, has it been shocking to see how the leech has been able to take the concept of the noble lie and not just start to erode some of the key values or mores of our society and our nation, but frankly to do a 180-degree opposite reversal of them. It's just striking to see it in practice. We covered many of these and discussed many of these examples in prior Far Middle podcasts, but go back and think about government, the original conceptualization of government to serve and protect the people, minimal government, to be there to benefit the citizenry. And yet you compare that to today, the deep state and these nameless, faceless bureaucrats and how they increasingly basically command the population, the creators, enablers, and servers out there, where you exist for the benefit of government, not the other way around today. The media, we talked about that, how it went from originally the most crucial, perhaps, pillar of our society to protect democracy and to protect things like free speech, the objective approach of the media when you wanted a factual discussion of what was going on, and how it just morphed into what it is today, which is very much an activist effort to sway minds and thoughts when it comes to different political beliefs or tenets. We talked about foundations and nonprofits, how the original creator of that foundation or the original donor had one view in mind, one mission in mind, and now we've seen example after example where that's been commandeered and often just reversed in very stark fashion and politicized, weaponized for political purposes, what the foundation is all about, very much against or counter to what the original intent was of the individual or the entity that created it. We talked about the legal profession and how that was once the protector of property rights and a facilitator of commerce within this nation, playing a crucial role. But now we see it taxing commerce and bleeding commerce more and more and appropriating rights instead of protecting individual rights. And we talked about public unions and particularly teachers' unions and how unions and the union movement within the United States didn't come out of nowhere. It came out of and was created or catalyzed because of business and the business community taking advantage of workers, whether it was wage rates or safe work conditions, unsafe work conditions, work rules, all of the above. And you had private sector unions that were organized and came together to bring more balance to that equation as a counter to very powerful industries or companies or entities. But then that was appropriated when it came to unions playing a role in the public sector with government workers and a teachers union as an example of that. And now you see it operating more as a political entity or a political body than anything else, where that's coming at the expense of the grade teacher or the student when it comes to proficiencies and competencies, and obviously the taxpayer that's paying for all of it. The hijacking of the noble eye within our higher education system, we discussed that at length in prior podcasts. Looking at the noble eye of how the higher education college-degreed individual would basically be a sign of a good parent or good parenting if your child was able to achieve that. Or for the student, how going to college was a path to a very fruitful and enjoyable career and a successful, well-lived life as an adult. And then academia taking that noble eye and using it to catalyze a 4+ year indoctrination program of one generation to the next to make it much more accepting and much more supportive of the Leech Way. And we talked about this in STEM, if you recall, how the idea that a humanities exposure or some exposure to humanities subjects would create a better, well-rounded engineer or a doctor or someone in a technical field, a scientist, and that would be that well-rounded individual would be superior to one that's more narrowly trained, let's say. But taking that noble eye and then using it as an opportunity to allow entrenched faculty in some of these programs or disciplines that are now becoming obsolete, and using it to subsidize them to the point where you're subverting traditional STEM curriculum and creating STEAM, right? Converting STEM into STEAM by injecting the arts. And what was the net result of that? Of course, the quality and the rigor of a STEM program or a STEM graduate has been diluted by design. We discussed misappropriation of the noble eye by the leech across finance. We talked about the Federal Reserve and how there was this noble eye that government intervention during times of crisis or severe economic distress to save the country and to save all of us from financial ruin was rational. But then the Fed, of course, took that noble eye and pressed it well beyond things like the 2008 financial meltdown and what happened with pandemic in 2020. And what did they do? They utilized this noble eye to basically dictate capital allocation across national economies and global economies for indefinite periods of time. There's no end to when those types of measures would no longer be justified. And the net result of that, as we discussed, are savers punished, creates asset bubbles over a very wide spectrum of all kinds of different investment vehicles and asset bases. And the net result of this, of course, is it fans dangerous flames of future economic firestorms. And I think most importantly, it does start to change culturally how saving has a positive connotation tied to it, and outspending or borrowing or debt has a negative connotation. And it reverses those in a way that fundamentally changes how we behave individually and across the entire economy. And continuing on in the arena of finance, we saw public pension fund managers. They take the noble eye of how responsible businesses or corporations or industries are sound investment opportunities. And then once again, they distort that and use it, misappropriate it to convert these fund assets, which are billions and in some instances trillions of dollars, into weapons. And they weaponize it to attack companies or industries that are found inconsistent with or counter to the leech way of viewing things and viewing life or its dogma. So what happens when you do that? Well, when you misappropriate that noble eye when it comes to public pensions, what do you sacrifice? Of course, the fiduciary's primary duty and obligation to the retirees and the active workers whose assets they are managing on their behalf. And you're also sacrificing returns on fund assets for those retirees, which puts the overall health of the pension and its ability to pay future promises at significant risk. That affects millions of people in a bad way. And we've seen this and discussed it play out even in areas or arenas such as religion. We talked about Pope Francis, took that noble eye of papal infallibility. And being a noble eye, when you apply infallibility of the Pope as it pertains to traditional Catholic doctrine and faith and morals. But then he took that, misappropriated it to use it to get into fields like radical environmentalism and other areas that are way beyond traditional Catholic values to further and grow his personal views and his socialist ideology. And since I mentioned radical environmentalism as it relates to Pope Francis, also have to call out the environmental movement, which in many ways, you compare what the environmental movement has been able to do with the Noble Eye versus all these other examples that we just ran through, it's probably been the most impressive, done the most impressive job, unfortunately, because the environmental movement has taken the Noble Eye of environmentalism being a way to clean the air and clear the water and improve quality of life and health for everyone within a community or within the planet. And then it's completely and grotesquely deformed that to create this idea, this religion, this zealotry encapsulated by climate change, where you're looking at something as widespread as CO2, carbon dioxide, which everything and everyone creates, utilizes, has a footprint with respect to some degree and in some extent when you're looking at it on a true life cycle basis, as you should. And it's taken someone that's something that's so prevalent, like CO2, and then applied that Noble Eye in a bad way to be able to effectively control and dictate and impact just about every single decision in life that you can think of across every corner and segment of society. As I said, when you look at the Noble Eye being misappropriated, I think the environmental movement has done the most impressive job of this across all those prior examples we just ran through. And isn't that saying something when you consider the effectiveness in what some of these other examples have been able to achieve towards ill-advised aims? Now, what happens if the leech is still able to, day after day, month after month, year after year, procure the Noble Eye for its ill-aimed objectives? We can see many examples of this across our nation today. You can point to, we've used the examples of New York City, California. We looked at different sectors from education to the energy industry and energy reliability. We've looked at tax and fiscal implications, the health of pensions. So there's quite a bit to choose from geographically or on subject topic matter if you choose. But I think one of the best examples that you can see of what happens when this plays out over time is an example that we put in the epilogue of what's going on in Illinois, and specifically what had happened when it came to the Illinois House of Representatives Speaker, who was Mr. Madigan. He was Speaker of the House since the early 80s. That is an all-time achievement, I believe, for any state, as well as Congress, by the way. So whether it's state House or a congressional Speaker position. And he recently stepped down in 2021 under some questionable clouds of uncertainty and controversy. But what Speaker Madigan has been able to do has really illustrated what happens when the leech is able to apply misappropriated Noble Eye over a long period of time, decades. And it's certainly not a pretty picture by any stretch of the imagination. I think we all know that Illinois is quite a mess. It's a mess financially. It's a mess if you look at areas like Chicago, which is a big driver of the state. It's a mess from a quality of life perspective. But that's what happens when you give someone like Speaker Madigan tight hold over the legislature for decades. When you see sort of how elections and how political leaders are selected across Illinois, it's not uncommon that at any given point in time, two-thirds of the seats in Illinois state elections don't even have an opponent that is running against the candidate that Madigan often endorsed. So that's a sure sign that that's not exactly democracy at work when you think of it. That seems to be much more of an aristocracy where people are hand-selected because of affiliation, and those hand-selected choices are basically shoe-ins that are unopposed when they assume their seats and their political positions. Gerrymandering has not been good to the state. That allowed the speaker and Democrats in the party within state to draw all kinds of really interesting squiggly district lines that basically were designed to make sure, to guarantee, that the victors of each election would be very friendly to the speaker, chosen by the speaker, and to what the Democratic Party within the state was trying to effectuate. Judges, same thing. Judges are elected in Illinois, and who are the judges that are winning? Boy, it correlates pretty well to those that receive the most money and support from the speaker's machine and the plaintiff's bar, I might add, which you would think is an obvious conflict of interest for that one key branch of government, the judiciary, that is supposedly there to keep the legislative and executive branches in check, but I guess not. And unsurprisingly, it wasn't too long before you had certain businesses or corporations that were effectively in the rent-seeking business, like utilities, that were being investigated for allegedly bribing associates who were tied to Madigan with jobs and contracts and board seats. And why were they doing that? Because, of course, Madigan was a person of substantial influence to the utility, and he could influence what the legislature was doing when it came to approving customer rate adjustments and projects and capital projects and the like that were very important to the utility. So not exactly the free market at work, but a very embodying of the leech way on both the business and commerce side as well as the political side. Yeah, democracy, as we've been taught about it and as we think of it, it's dead in Illinois. And it doesn't matter whether it's the policy or the legislature or the judiciary. You look across all those different segments, it's much more of an aristocracy that's run by the elite. And those decisions are made by the elite, not the people, not the people that are looked at as taxpayers or the citizens that are making things happen. And once it's a system that builds upon itself, once you have these interests in power, what do? They quickly shift everything that's being done and decided across all the different facets of Illinois business, society, and government to feed the leech instead of to assist and serve people, commerce, etc. It's a complete reversal. Now, while all of that is occurring with the speaker, has occurred with the speaker, and all that was occurring with the entrenched class and the elite class, what happens within Illinois? Well, we talked about how financially the state's a wreck. Chicago is a bigger financial wreck. We talked about the state of pensions, public pensions within Illinois and Chicago. Not a pretty picture. We have an example in the book of the suburb of Harvey outside of Chicago and what's happening to those citizens when it comes to property tax and public services and special tax assessments and how that correlates to poverty rate. Ridiculous what those people are subjected to and what they have to go through in the suburb of Harvey. Education system in Illinois is a mess, particularly in the larger cities. Kids can't even get to school safely or get home from school safely, let alone achieve competency in reading and writing and science and math. And when you look at businesses across the state, not a very friendly place to establish any type of commercial endeavor, no matter what your industry is, just because of the draconian rules that, again, are all designed with how they're put in place to appropriate as much value as possible from the creator, the enabler, and the server, and put it and pour it into the mouth of the leech. The reason I'm bringing this example of ex-speaker Madigan and Illinois to the front of the Farm Middle podcast and the book The Leech is not because I've got a bone to pick with the ex-speaker or there's something I don't like about the state of Illinois or the city of Chicago. Quite the contrary. Love them both. It's because it's a perfect example of what we have to fear, what we should be concerned about if the leech is allowed to continue to progress and grow to the extent that it has. It's the perfect exemplar of what's in store for all of us. And you see this exodus that's occurring across the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago with residents and taxpayers and businesses. That is something, again, that is going to foreshadow what might be in store for many of us, not just in Illinois or in New York or California. That should just be a warning, advance warning device, if anything else, for the rest of us. And again, the flip side of this is that while all this damage is being done and you see all these repercussions and bad results coming from it, there's a flip side. And the flip side is that who wins, who gains, who benefits? Well, of course, it's someone like the ex-speaker Madigan, who's behind a lot of this and driving a lot of this change. He's an attorney out of Chicago, and he is a partner in a Chicago law firm. The law firm bears his name in its title. And what's the specialty? The specialty is property tax appeals. So you think about that iron triangle. Think about how the leech way lays out its philosophy and its tactics. So here you have that basically at work in the experiment or laboratory that is the real world and that is Illinois and Chicago politics. So the ex-speaker, he leads the legislature, and you can do things like enacting big spending bills and raising taxes. And of course, included in that is property tax and property tax assessment. When you're a homeowner or a taxpayer or a business and you're getting squeezed to the point where you can't take anymore with your tax bill, what do? You go hire a law firm. What law firm are you going to hire? Well, you might hire the ex-speaker's law firm. And what are they going to do? They're going to represent you in court. And that judiciary branch of government that I spoke about that the ex-speaker also played a heavy hand in influencing. And you're going to hire that law firm to argue for lower taxes so that you can withstand the pain. And who is going to charge a fee for that? Who's going to benefit from that? The law firm. And of course, the partners in the law firm, one of which being the ex-speaker. And the judges that are hearing you out, who are they? Oftentimes, I bet it's not uncommon that they were recipients of political contributions from the machine and the network. You look at that, boy, if it was not something that was officially sanctioned by government, if this were some other type of entity, you would call it sort of a criminal type endeavor or a Ponzi scheme or some sort of extortion racket. It definitely, that's the iron triangle at work when it comes to government, completely legal. Right. But when you look at whether it passes the smell test or not, definitely does not pass the smell test by any measure. Yeah, for sure. Illinois and Chicago and what's going on with respect to those regions of this great nation and all the pain that's being inflicted upon creators, enablers and servers and taxpayers and kids. That is our future. That's all of our futures. If we continue to allow the leech to misapply and distort the concept of the noble lie. And that's why when I stumbled upon the concept by accident, reading up a little bit on Plato's Republic, while writing the book, The Leech, I said, wouldn't this serve as a wonderful epilogue to try to bring the leech way and what's occurring with respect to the leech's efforts into a broader understanding and a more of a philosophical context, which again was the catalyst for that. And then perhaps one final thought on the noble lie that I found really fascinating. When I stumbled on the idea or the concept and started to read up on it, it also helped me rationalize another debate in my head that you hear a lot out there today across society. And this is the contrast and the contradictions that is the United States of America. So on one hand, I've got this pride in our country. I think we're the greatest nation on earth. I think we're the greatest nation ever to have existed. I think we've got a proud history. I'm proud to be part of it. And I believe in the concepts that created and drive the United States of America. But on the flip side, being a realist, I think anybody that says that we're perfect or have been perfect is kidding themselves or is in a deep state of denial. There have been different periods of time and different chapters in our history, in our national experience that have been very bad and things that have been done in ways over significant periods of time that were completely counter to some of those ethics and tenets that we hold near and dear to our hearts. Slavery is the biggest example. That's civil rights, the biggest example of that, but there have been others as well. So this is a far from perfect journey, and to this day, many of those issues and problems continue to manifest themselves in really big ways. And that's, of course, troubling. But you're trying to sync these two views up where you're proud of what the country stands for and you wouldn't want to live anywhere else. And you think it is the shining light for the rest of the world to follow. But it's far from perfect for many people throughout its history and many people living within the country today. Far from perfect. And the noble lie is a way to bring those two things together, where there's a lot of truth in what the underlying ethics and values were of this country and what we stood for. A lot of truth in that. But there's also many examples of where we didn't live up to that or we don't currently live up to that. And to me, that is one of the interesting aspects of the noble lie written way back when by Plato in the Republic that actually could play a very important and impactful role today with this public discourse about the United States of America and all of its greatness, yet flying in the face of all of our imperfections as we strive for perfection, but fall short of that time and again. So I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Far Middle Podcast and talking through some philosophical coaching trees of Socrates and Plato and Aristotle and stumbling upon this idea that that Plato hit upon with the noble eye and saying, wow, this is something that is, from a broader perspective, really highlighting and contrasting the differences between creators, enablers, and servers on one side, creating value and driving quality of life, and then the leech on the other side that's looking to appropriate and bleed them on an increasing level. So again, I hope it was as poignant for you as it was for me. Next episode of the Far Middle Podcast, we're going to spend some time just talking about how two events, as I was writing the book, The Leech, really shined a light on some of the themes that I was trying to explore. And those two events were the 2016 and the 2020 presidential elections. So I'm writing about these concepts or thinking about them on one hand, and then I turn on the TV or the radio and log on to the internet, and wow, there's like a front and center example of this in a huge, outsized way that it's being brought to light. We're going to talk a little bit about that and how neat of an experience that was on the next podcast. I encourage you to follow me on Twitter, constant listener at Nick DeOlias. And of course, the website, nickdeolias.com. Click on that from time to time, whether it's for the podcast of The Far Middle or the chapter by chapter release of the book, The Leech, or just some new commentary that we're going to start posting on there once we get through the chapter release of the book. Enjoyed spending the time with you on this episode, and we'll be back together soon enough. Until then, stay safe and take care.